Welcome to this week's edition of This Week in U2 History. I'm your host, Eric Shivers. On this week's show, I will peel apart the 20th anniversary deluxe box set of Achtung Baby. I'll review some headlines and discuss Neil McCormick's blog about why he thinks U2 will not split up. And of course, we'll visit Gig of the Week. So sit back and enjoy the show. In the opener, I wanted to peel apart this new 20th anniversary release of Achtung Baby by the band. By now, most fans have bought one of the five editions of this great box set, and wanted to kind of dig inside of it. You know, I had no hesitation in purchasing the Super Deluxe box set. You know, I have most of the material scattered around my house, but the real reason for the purchase was to get my hands on that Kindergarten disc that was included in the Super Box set, which is a much more raw disc than the final eventual release of Achtung Baby. There's a fucked up version of Even Better Than the Real Thing, really sort of captures that sort of raw working feeling that the band was working on with this song. And that eventual cut, you know, came into the live show of the 360 tour at the very end. They really sort of played that song to sort of its true nature, which was kind of cool. You know, some of the songs on this particular individual disc are closer to the final product. However, the minor differences are great to listen to as it really sort of unveils the curtain to the band's creative process. I would have liked to have heard, you know, some of these tracks maybe a generation or two earlier, but I'm afraid that the band probably thought that that was too much of a work in progress and, you know, probably just didn't have that sort of, you know, formality that would have kept the interest or been just sort of like too much gobbledygook, as Bono would have called it. But I do want to say that, you know, it was worth buying the box in order to get the Kindergarten disc. I think it was a really sort of a great insight. I do want to give the band props for adding the tracks, you know, Blow Your House Down, Heaven and Hell, Oh Berlin, and Down All the Days, all of which were sort of leaked to studio outtakes shortly before the album's release. What's really cool about them reworking these tunes is that they didn't let the studio leaks that came out in 1991 sort of stand on their own. Instead, you know, they got in front of them and finished them out for this, you know, this this great celebration of this album. You know, the thing is that it's sort of Bono singing in his sort of like 2011 voice as compared to having that nice raw sound that he had in 1991. However, you know, give or take one way or the other, it's got that sort of U2 funk from the early 90s, which I sort of liked. And I think everybody else sort of has caught on that they wish there was a little bit more of this material, because there actually is more material than these four songs. I'm just wondering if they sort of ran out of ideas in order to finish those songs out, or they just sort of felt, nah, we'll let those sort of sit on the cutting room floor. What I feel really is missing in this box set is something special. I think the addition of the Zoo TV show from Sydney in DVD format is, in my mind, a sort of filler. I think the band should have included another live concert DVD, or at least included the live audio recording of the simulcast from that last night on the Zoo TV tour in Dublin at the Royal Dublin Stadium. But overall, I'm pleased with the release, because for those of fringe U2 fans, this box set really covers a great load of the work during their most intense and progressive recording period of their overall 35 years. We've got a way of rating this. We're going to call it the Edge Beanies. I'll give the audio portion of this 4 Edge Beanies out of 6. Next week, I'll review the video content inside this 20th anniversary. And until then, enjoy the audio. You know, over the past few weeks, a lot of publicity about this Achtung Baby release. Things have been out in the press about the band and their relevancy in today's music. Specifically, that's coming from Bono. He was quoted in the Q magazine that he doesn't think that they're as relevant as what they used to be. And that can be sort of the sense when you've been a band for 35 years and you're looking back in the rearview mirror on your career and you're sort of looking at what you've done now. And, you know, when you're young and hungry, you want to make that change. And, you know, we saw that with the War album and with Joshua Tree. They were always at the forefront of making a little noise. And now that they've gotten to be a little older, you know, there's a question of whether they still are relevant in the grand scheme of things. I still think they are. Neil McCormick, who is a close friend with Bono growing up, wrote the book I Was Bono's Doppelganger, which turned into Killing Bono, the movie, wrote a great blog last week at the Telegraph about what he thinks is going on with the band. You know, he's sort of taken a step back from all of this frenzy and panic about one person's statement and sort of looks at the peels away the onion skin of the band and how you know, some of this may just be posturing for right now. As we've known, you know, REM just called it a day after they've been in the business for 30 some years. You know, they sort of walked away amicably, and I think they did it before, you know, the infighting really began. I'm not really going to speak to REM, but you know, they did it the right way. They walked away knowing of their body of work and said, let's let that stand and still be friends. U2, on the other hand, I think a little different. I think that they get to the point when they come off a tour, they're like, okay, are we still who we are? Are we still what we stand for? You know, they've been on the tour, been on the road for the 360 tour for almost 2 years, you know, and once that's over with, I mean, there's just sort of this huge, you know, explosion of just like euphoria of saying, okay, it's done. Now what do we do? It's time to move on. Us fans are always wanting more because we just saw them live. You know, we've got some trinkets from the show, and we were like, well, what's next for the band? You know, this band has always been one of those things that has put themselves and wrapped themselves around a situation, and really waited for the creative process to come to them. And Neil McCormick sort of says, you know, Edge, yeah, I'm just going to quote sort of loosely here. He says in his blog that Edge refers to it as Jeopardy. It's a constant buzzword in his discussions of the creative process. You know, you two need to feel that there are things at stake when they're writing and recording, deliberately using tension and risk to maintain focus. And I think that's true with most people. I think what happens is once you get out there and you've exposed yourself to the world, you know, you want to come back in and you want to pull things in and you want to sort of like go find yourself. You know, Bono says he wants to plug in his iPod and get lost with his children. I think that's perfectly fine and valid. You know, there are a lot of great things that he has done since he came off the tour in August, and it sort of seems he's been on his own whirlwind tour, dealing with, you know, global issues and with Clinton and celebrating Desmond Tutu's birthday. But I just want to say that I think Neil McCormick got it right. You know, he sat back for a few minutes and sunk in with what he knows about the band and how they've evolved over the years and dealing with these changes within themselves and then trying to take those changes and go into the recording studio and find their time to work. You know, they are sort of these, as he says, super rich, middle-aged, you know, rockers who've achieved all the creative heights they wanted to as a youth. You know, you contrast that when you're young and you're hungry, it's sort of a matter of life and death. That really doesn't matter with U2 anymore, but I think that they still do stand some relevance. You know, I just hope that they can go back again, and as Bono said in the 90s, you know, dream it all up again, and we look forward to their next creative achievement. Welcome back to This Week in U2 History. We've come to the favorite part of the show of Gig of the Week. And this week we venture back to November 7th, 1984 in Glasgow, Scotland, when U2 was on the Unforgettable Fire Tour. On this night they played the Barrowlands, which was a venue of about 5,000 people. It was the smallest show on the tour, to which they were usually playing to an average of about 12,000. But on this night, they pulled out some of those war classics such as Surrender and Two Hearts Beat as One, as well as Sunday Bloody Sunday. What made this show really special was during soundcheck that afternoon, Charlie Burchill of the Scottish band Simple Minds showed up and had a little chat with the band. And that night, when the band was performing their song 40 as a closer, Charlie came on stage and played guitar while his bandmates in Simple Minds sat at the back of the venue taking it all in. As the show closed out, spotlights were turned onto the back of the house, and the audience turned around and clapped in celebration of seeing their Scottish brethren. So that's the gig of the week, November 7th, 1984, Glasgow, Scotland at the Barrellands, U2 on the Unforgettable Fire Tour. Until next week, keep the needle inside the vinyl grooves and keep on rocking out. Thanks so much for listening. Bye-bye.
Listening to This Week in U2 History, brought to you by 822design.com, a different kind of design firm. Eric Shivers is the author of I'm a Fan, How I Married U2 Into My Life Without Going to the Altar, available at amazon.com. Read more about Eric's memoir at imauTwoFan.com and join the conversation. Tune in next week for more U2 History.